I don't care what I have to do. They are not going to ignore me. So I would get up. I would walk around the room. I would stand on a chair in the middle of the room. I would shout. I would run. I would scream. I would kick things. I would, you know, if I was mad at the devil, I would kick something. And if I was happy for Jesus, I would, you know, run around. Woo-hoo-hoo! So, you know, to
I imagine
me,
at 18 or 19, that would have been a lot easier to do. And, you know, other besides being like 47.
I did it up till I quit at 36. I'd like to think I still have it in me.
Okay.
But, you know,
that would definitely be entertaining.
and I mean, people just come out and be like, wow, I've never really seen anybody speak like you. And I'm just like, listen, if you're not listening, I'm not speaking. So I think Paul said something like, I'll be a fool for Christ. Mm-hmm. And his context was all of the troubles and trials and tribulations he'd gone through in life. But the context of the statement was, in order to reach people with this message, I'll do whatever I have to do.
Welcome to Audio Branding, the hidden gem of marketing. Sound plays a more important role in human behavior and our decision-making than you may realize. In this podcast, I'll help you understand the art and science of sound so you can better influence others in business and your life. I'm your host, Jody Krangle. Let's delve a little deeper. Here's the first part of my conversation with DM Metter. My next guest is the founder and CEO of the Legal Podcast Network, a turnkey podcasting, marketing, and content solution for the legal industry. With nearly 30 years in marketing, over 20 of those focused on white-collar industries, especially the legal sector, he brings extensive experience in branding, podcasting, and beyond. His name is Dennis Metter, or DM as he prefers to be called, and I'm looking forward to discussing his take on branded podcasts, how it improves client engagement, and where he thinks podcasting for specific industries will head into the future. As always, if you have questions for my guest, you're welcome to reach out through the links in the show notes. If you have questions for me, visit audiobrandingpodcast.com, where you'll find a lot of ways to get in touch. Plus, subscribing to the newsletter will let you know when the new podcasts are available, along with other interesting bits of audio-related news. And if you're getting some value from listening, the best ways to show your support are to share this podcast with a friend and leave an honest review. Both those things really help, and I'd love to feature your review on future podcasts. You can leave one either in written or in voice format from the podcast's main page. I would so appreciate that. And now, here's my conversation with DM Metter.
Well, welcome, DM. I'm glad that you're here. I appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you for having me. Good to be here.
I know that we had chatted a little bit before we got started. So
yes.
you're telling me what it is that you do, which is the production of a lot of legal podcasts. And it sounds like you're well on track to do really well. So good for you. And I won't congratulate you yet.
Don't congratulate me till I've crossed the finish line, whatever I perceive that to be.
Got it.
You can cheer me on. I appreciate the cheering
on. I will cheer you
on.
I'll
take it as a cheering on.
Yes. So I usually start the podcast by asking a question of all of my guests, and that is if you can tell me a story of an early memory of how sound moved you.
Absolutely. So it's kind of funny. When I was probably about 5-6 years old, so I grew up in the church life, the old school fundamental church life. You know, I don't know if you've lived that or not. People listening, maybe there's a few that can kind of identify with it. And, you know, we just listened to church music. We went to church 5 times a week. We didn't really watch TV, all of that sort of stuff. So I remember we had an evangelist come in, and his name was Monty Martin. And my parents I wanted his tape so bad because I just thought he was such a good singer, right? So we bought his tape, and that would be the tape that I would always make sure gets played in the car. And it got to the point where within a short amount of time, I had every song memorized off of that tape, both sides, every song front to back. Still to this day, probably 3 or 4 of them off the top of my head, I could just sing them from scratch. And it got to the point where that tape wore out. I'm the oldest of 6 kids. We started having, you know, more kids. And then my dad, we would travel around. So now I'm about, you know, I'm still listening to this tape. It's still my favorite tape of all time. And, you know, it's the kind of thing that I would just sing all the time. I'd love to sing. We were in church. It was obviously highly encouraged. And then they just push you up front if you can carry a tune in a bucket. So I was pushed up front quite a bit as a young person. But we would, in my car, we would have like my baby brother, my little brother, my two little sisters. And we didn't really like have like, we'd have some radio that my parents could play tapes and things like that. But when we'd run out of those, they would just ask me to sing. And so I would just sing to them for like, you know, sing the different song, church songs, the songs off this tape, just for hours and hours and hours. And I just remember thinking as a young teenager, how I was able to like, you know, my parents would be like, oh, calm down back there. You got wrestling around, you know, kids in a van, you know, driving for 6-8 hours at a time. But like, literally, I could just sit there and sing for an hour and all my brothers and sisters just quiet, calm, just listen. And each one of them to this day could probably tell you most every song I sang. And so that I would say is probably one of my favorites because it goes back, but then it's spanned and into my, you know, teenage years. And then the impact it had on my teenage years was like, wow, my voice has such an impact and an effect even on just my little brothers and sisters.
Well, sure. Yeah. Sound is a universal language. So there you go. You learned your communication early. So exactly. from singing. So I know that you mentioned to me the last time we spoke that you became a pastor at a really mm-hmm. early age. So what was that like?
It's one of those things when you look back on it, you're like, what on earth? Like, why did they even allow me to? Like, my first church, I was 18. I was a youth pastor at 16. And I'm like, why? Like, guys my age would just like sit down on Sunday morning and for 3 hours listen to some 19-year-old kid. Like, I would never listen to some 19-year-old, 20-year-old, 18-year-old kid tell me how to live life. I'd just be like, you're barely out of diapers, kid, you know? But it happened. I mean, again, that was another phase in my life where I learned the importance of using my voice differently. So singing is obviously a whole different instrument than using your voice for speaking properly.
Oh, sure. And so, they have relation, though. Like, they're definitely related to each other. Yeah,
absolutely. But, I think it's like French and Spanish, right? They're both Latin-based. Sure. But, and you can, they definitely, you can see the roots of one another, but there's definitely nuance to each of them individually.
Yes.
And so getting up and learning to speak in public and things like that, I'd already done a lot of it because when I was 18, I was in college and stuff like that. But even in high school, I spoke in youth group the majority of the time. I was like the youth pastor, youth director, but more of just speaking. And then when I got to that point where I was speaking, it was like really, you know, it really wasn't anything I thought about. It was just get up, do it, talk. And, you know, but seeing like how talking in a hushed tone all of a sudden could like quiet a crowd or getting really excited, you know, and I'm trying to control it because we're on mic now, but getting really excited. And, you know, you could just see people's eyes just start to like pop a little bit. And so, you know, just using the different parts of your voice to bring across something and take people on a journey. A lot of my sermons that I would do, I like to use a very storytelling style. So instead of it being a straight, like, here's the scripture, here's what the scripture says, now you go do this. And I would do that partially, but I really loved sort of like a storytelling. I had one where when I traveled around preaching, preachers would call other preachers and say, hey, you need to have this guy do this one sermon. And I would essentially take basically, I don't know if you grew up in church or not, but there's like a story of like 10 lepers who get healed by Jesus. He gives us as an illustration or something, but only one comes back and thanks him. And so I tell the story of the time that he gets healed to everything he does until he comes back to the feet of Jesus. And I kind of tell it like are you familiar with the book Pilgrim's Progress?
No.
Okay. It's an old book from like the 1700s that most like... Yeah. Like strict Christians know, and it's essentially it's an allegorical book about this guy named Christian who goes through life, and he makes it through the pit of despair, and he makes it through the city of temptation, and so I essentially tell it like that, like his old neighbor Mister works a lot, and he's just like, yeah, I don't have time for that, and so I'd like tell the story of this man like traveling along, seeing his old friends, and them all just like not caring about what happened to him, and him going back and being like, well, I'm just going to worship at the feet of Jesus then because no one understands what I've been through. So, you know, seeing like the impact of storytelling and our voice and all that we can do, I know personally, I can hold a room, and this is just vibes in general, understanding, about 300 to 500 people I can hold in a room, and I can hold the vast majority of the people's attention. Once we get above that, I have to kind of guess whether or not I'm holding attention, because you can't really feel the energy. It kind of gets above your ability to monitor it. I've spoken to, you know, 2,000-3,000 a few times, something like that. Sure. And you feel like you're almost shouting into an abyss, you know, versus like that 300 to 500, you can almost feel the energy and see the whether or not people are plugged in all across the whole room.
So and how do you keep people plugged in to what you're saying, that 300 to 500 people? Like, do you have a particular set of things that you make sure you do when you're speaking to a group like that?
Are you enjoying this podcast? If so, it would really help me out if you'd give it a review. The best place to do that in written format is at the bottom of the audiobrandingpodcast.com page. And if you want to do that in voice format, there's a link in the ending paragraph at the top of that same page. I would so appreciate that. It helps me to know what you'd like to hear more of and why you're listening in the first place. As podcasters, we rarely know who's actually listening, so it helps me to know that I'm not just speaking into the void. Thanks for that. And now, back to the show.
Not really, but like, at the time, and again, this has been, it's been 10 years since I've spoken regularly in this capacity, but like, okay. I always had a couple of philosophies. One is, if no one's listening, am I really speaking? Right? And like, I don't know, again, just growing up in church, I just see people like, now it'd be on their phone, but they'd be writing notes about nothingness. The kids would be playing with little games. And I'm just like, here's this guy, he's prepared, or girl, or whatever, this individual who's prepared this thing that they think is very important. And then you got 80% of the congregation just like unplugged and doing their own thing. And so I was just like, you know what? I don't care what I have to do. They are not going to ignore me. So I would get up, I would walk around the room, I would stand on a chair in the middle of the room, I would shout, I would run, I would scream, I would kick things, I would, you know, if I was mad at the devil, I would kick something, and if I was happy for Jesus, I would, you know, run around, woo-hoo-hoo! So, you know, to
me, I imagine at 18 or 19, that would have been a lot easier to do, and, you know, other, besides being like 47.
I did it up till I quit at 36. I'd like to think I still have it in me.
Okay.
But, you know,
That would definitely be entertaining.
and I mean, people just come out and be like, wow, I've never really seen anybody speak like you. And I'm just like, listen, if you're not listening, I'm not speaking. So
sure.
I think Paul said something like, I'll be a fool for Christ. Mm-hmm. And his context was all of the troubles and trials and tribulations he'd gone through in life. But the context of the statement was, in order to reach people with this message, I'll do whatever I have to do. And that was the philosophy I took into it. If I had teenagers, I could be a little more bolder. If I had, you know, a crowd of like people that are a little older, you know, I like to do things that would kind of really make people off kilter. Like I had this one sermon that I would do, and it was about a prophet. And this prophet, basically his message was he had to stand in front of the crowd, and they all knew he was the prophet from God. And I think it was like 3 minutes every day, or it was something like, you know, it was a relatively short amount of time, but for there to be no silence. So he'd like go and stand in front of everybody and just say nothing. And then they'd be like, well, what does God want? Well, you know, and they'd throw it at him. And his message was, God's done talking to you. You need to act on it. So I used to have a sermon that I started that way, and I would set my notes all up, and I would just kind of settle in, and I put my arms on the pulpit, and I just look at the people, and I just put like a half pleasant smile on my face. And I'd look around and I'd say nothing. And it's always the oldest lady in the church that she becomes the speaker for everybody. I remember one time I heard her say, did you prepare anything? Why are you just staring at us? And then I would just go like this. I was, wait. Now I would tell them first to open to the scripture. I'd say, open to this scripture. And then I would stand there. Now, the people that open the scripture would like look down and read it and then look up at me and go, oh, I know what he's doing. But the people that wouldn't open their Bibles and read the scripture, they were just like, why is he standing here staring at us? And I want to say I would do it for like 90 seconds.
Yeah, I was going to ask you how long. Yeah.
It was just long enough. Like at about 45 seconds is when people realized like, what's going on? What's wrong? About a minute, they start to get a little irritated. And then when it gets about a minute 15, you start to get like, what's going on here? What is this? Why are we? And then finally at a minute and a half, I would read the scripture to them. And then the people that would get sort of like impatient, they would realize that they were mirroring the people in the Bible that were acting negatively. And then it was just like, it was a sermon unto itself to just stand quietly for 90 seconds in front of people.
You know,
so again, just the power of sound, or the lack thereof.
Or the lack thereof. Yeah, exactly. And I find it really interesting to think of that in its context. So if you're in a church doing that, then people are going to get annoyed at a certain point. If you're doing that in a comedy club, they start to laugh.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it just depends on where you are. Again, context is really paramount to all of that. But a fantastic early career, definitely, and certainly put you in good stead for communication later in life. But speaking of communication, you went on to sell ads, right? So you ended
actually, I did that in college. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been an entrepreneur since I was 14. Most every position I ever had in ministry, I paid my own bills and tied into the church that I was the pastor of. So like I could take these like poor churches in like really rough parts of town that needed a church. And I'd just be like, you know, I'll be the pastor. And they'd be like, wait, what? Like you could put two sentences together. Most guys who say yes are like trying to be closer to the crack houses or something. I don't know. You know, so I'm just like, no, like I'll take it and I'll work with you guys. But I had my own money, so I could do those things. And then when I started, you know, when I started selling ads, and I, you know, maps, magnets, posters, magazines, this is like the late 90s, mid to late 90s, I realized like, wow, there's a lot of money in this. And not only is there money in this, but in a way you're helping these businesses. You know, if you're not ripping them off and you're really producing the product and it's a good thing, then like you're helping these companies. And so I was like, you know, this is something I can feel good about, yet make pretty good money and take care of me and mine, instead of like, because I lived in a house, my dad usually kept like part-time jobs and my mom kept like a full-time job. And my dad also did ministry.
Are you looking for ways to improve your company's or podcast's impact? You'd be surprised how powerful the use of an intentional audio branding strategy can be. Want to know more? I have a free downloadable PDF that gives you my 5 tips for implementing an intentional audio strategy at voiceoversandvocals.com/audio-branding-strategy. That location does ask to put you on a mailing list, just to send you updates on when the new podcasts come out. But if you really don't want to give your email out, I understand. Just contact me directly. My email is all over my website, and I'll make sure you get that PDF without needing to sign up anywhere. If you do sign up, though, you also get access to a resources section called The Studio, where I have videos, white papers, and PDFs, discounts from my guests, and snippets of audio from my guests that no one else gets to hear. So maybe it's worth your while. Totally up to you. And of course, if you're looking for voiceovers, you can get in touch with me about that too. Now, back to the podcast.
I wanted it to be where I made enough money, where we lived comfortably, and I did ministry. And so, and then I was able to pretty much do that my entire career. But that's when I started. I had had my first business at 14, 18. That's when I started another business. 20, I started a company, and I retired in about a year. And I spent 4 or 5 years living back and forth in Romania. And I was doing evangelist work here and there. And so I think it was an easy, I've never had a problem talking to people, sales, groups, you know, it's never bothered me.
That's fantastic.
The only thing I've ever had nerves about when it comes to sound is when I was in church, we were so concerned about not being vain and bringing glory to ourselves and our singing that we weren't really allowed to sing the way that I like to sing, because I kind of portion my life grew up in the Black community. And so like, I like to say I have a little bit of soul. And so like, but like in our movement, it was like you couldn't do anything but just straight sing, oh, 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 you know, that sort of singing. And whereas I kind of like more soulful music. So I would get up and I would be nervous because I would essentially have to sing out of my element. So I didn't feel like I was expressing myself, although I was. It's like being able to, it's like you're in a 100-yard dash and you're against like all of your competition and you're just like skipping. You're like, yeah. I know I can do a lot faster than this, and I know that I can keep up with all these people, but I'm only allowed to skip.
You know,
that's
it's
kind of
funny
how I felt.
It's funny because I relate this to there is a segment of voiceover that will ask you to do singing. And often when they're doing singing on a commercial, they want you to sing badly.
Really?
Yeah, because it's supposed to be humorous or something like that, right? So if they want it to be humorous, or they just want it to be somebody maybe in the shower, or somebody who is like, you know, doing something in the kitchen and they're semi-distracted or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. But I'm a singer. And so when they ask me to do this, I can't do it. It's hard. It
Can
is
you go
really
to karaoke?
Hard. I do, but I don't dial it back.
No, I don't either, but I don't like going to karaoke.
Yeah.
Not because, like, I like it when I get to sing.
Yeah.
But, you know, people get up there and they're just like,
Yeah.
Just like,
part of it is you have to listen to the people who are just very happy about it.
Yes. And I love my wife, but that's her style.
Yeah.
She's just like, she gets up and sings like Janis Joplin or Joan mm-hmm. Jett or whatever. And she's like, I'm like, baby. She's like, how'd I do? I'm like, I love you so much.
That's fun, though. I mean, I can take that and have fun with it, just because
I could take it for a little bit, but it's kind of like nails on a chalkboard. After like I can go to karaoke like an hour and a half and sing twice.
Yeah.
But for the people who want to go there for 3-4 hours and listen to just like people get drunker and drunker and stupider and stupider.
Yeah.
And then now we got to break out the, you know, nasty booty songs from the early 2000s and you know, and well, I've got to pretend that I can rap because, you know, I knew this song when I was a kid. And it's like, I don't pretend like I can rap. Why are you pretending like we can't rap? Like,
yeah, so. It's it can get rowdy and it can get less than melodious, let's say.
Yes.
So yeah, I get it. But moving on to communication again in sound, you've moved on to podcasting for lawyers now. So how did that come about?
Well, I've worked with attorneys in marketing for about 20 years of my career. That's been my niche mm-hmm. specialty. And I've had several, I've had social agency, I've had SEO companies. Like I said, I've just been a serial entrepreneur. I've had three companies.
Why lawyers? I have to ask.
Yeah, and that's a question everybody asks.
Yeah.
For me, lawyers act in logic instead of emotion. And so although they're tough people and rather condescending, if you can match them in their level and in their, they perceive that your intelligence is equal to theirs, and they perceive that you know what you're talking about just as much as they know what they're talking about when it comes to law, then you can have a, although at times tense, you can have a conversation that I don't have to use sales tactics. I don't have to act like I'm their new best friend. I don't have to look for things in the background and pretend that, look at that. I see that you've got a candle on your in the back of your thing. You know, I really love candles. You must like candles. Like, we should be best friends. Like, we both like candles. You know,
that happens
that sort
on
of like,
LinkedIn every day.
Yeah. It's just like, it's so disingenuous to me. But like with attorneys, I just start off, I'm like, listen, we scheduled 30 minutes for this. I'm going to try to get it done in 20. I'm not going to act like I'm your new best friend. We're going to get right into this. Don't hesitate to ask me any questions along the way. But if it's okay with you, I'd like to just jump straight into our meeting. Is that okay? And they're like, yeah, that's great. You know, then we jump in. And so you can use logic and they don't get emotional. So you can just be like, okay, I hear your point, but what about this? What about this? And have you considered this? And if you're logical, you can bring them to a conclusion where they're like, you know what? You're right. That makes sense. Let's give it a try. Whereas I found with blue collar type business owners, they tend to be more emotional. And I know I'm stereotyping. I'm not saying every blue collar workers, but like typically if you call a roofer and he's like, nah, I'm not interested. And you're like, well, have you considered this? He's like, F you, how dare you try to tell me to run my business? You know what I mean? Whereas with a lawyer,
ouch.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, and again, you have to be willing to fight that game. And I fought the game and I've won it, but I
think
would
it would depend on the roofer, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, that's why lawyers, they act in logic. And mm-hmm. if you come in at their level, you can have a good, respectful conversation with them. That's mm-hmm. what I've learned through the years.
Okay.
If you come in weak, though, they will steal your lunch money and laugh at you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I can get that. Yeah.
Hello, I'm Cheryl Halling, and I'm here to endorse my podcasting colleague and friend, Jody Krangle. Jody has a true passion to educate and inform her listeners of the power of sound in our lives by welcoming unique and interesting guests that offer their own experience of how sound plays a role in the work they do. I encourage you to add her podcast into your listening repertoire. I believe that you'll understand the importance of sound in a fresh new way.
So have you had a client of yours that then changed their business or their approach with clients or anything happen after they decided to do a podcast with you?
Well,
how is it improved is what I mean.
I think what you need to understand is they don't come on my podcast. What we do is we create their podcast for them.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I was referring to. So when you created a podcast for them, how did that change their business?
I mean, we've seen definitely success. Like, for example, I mean, two home runs for us, which is kind of like serendipitous timing, but at the same time, like, so we have one guy who has a show that he deals with FDA imports. And I mean, who doesn't want to know what's going on with imports and tariffs right now? We have another guy who is a federal employee. Like, basically, if you get fired and you're a federal employee, he helps you with, like, fair firing and all of that.
And that's
so
a lot
we
needed right now, too.
Again, another hot button issue. Oof. But what made the difference was they went from being on a local platform and a referral base with our marketing. All of a sudden, when this stuff started getting searched, they jumped straight up to the top. And now they're getting nationwide, just, you know, so it's increased where they're just like, wow, now I'm picking clients.
So their reach has increased. Okay.
Yes, their reach has increased. But what we teach our clients is it's not about the reach, it's about reaching your more of your ideal client profile. Mm-hmm. So if you have 50,000 downloads or views of a show, but they're all over the world and no one calls you, it's not nearly as valuable as if you have 50 and 10 people call, 50 people locally, 10 of them call you and six of them hire you. That is infinite. So 50 could be infinitely more valuable than 50,000. And so that's what we, you know, try to help them understand is you're producing very niche content. But if anybody consumes your content, it's because they want to and chances are they need you. So that's where we see growth with all of our clients is, you know, they answer this question, somebody finds it, then they call them, hey, I saw your show, I was watching your podcast, and you answered all the questions about, like, you know, what happens to a second home during a divorce and what happens to a boat? Because we've got a lot of toys and we're looking at a divorce. You know, is there a way for me to keep my boat? Like, you know, that sort of stuff. That's what our clients get, is just more of their ideal clients.
Sure. And sound wise, is there a particular podcast that you've worked on that you've enjoyed a lot, or any that stick out in your mind?
I have one guy who has basically we do a podcast with him, and then he went and made his own second podcast, but then he's also started bringing on guests, because a lot of our clients, they just come on the show themselves and then our host asks them the questions. And so he started bringing on clients, and he's really started doing a lot with his show. He's really starting to teach. He's understanding the importance of content marketing being like an 80-20, not like a 50-50. It's not 50% sell your product, 50% give them something that makes them want to buy your product. It's like 80% value, 20%, hey, by the way, if you want to buy, this is who I am and what I do. And he's really plugged into that. And because of that, he's building relationships, seeing growth, and he's you know, seeing a lot happen with his podcast.
Yeah, good for him. Yeah. So do any of your podcasts have like intros and outros?
They all have intros and outros. We build them. We use skins as well with like, you know, bottom thirds and then their logo and branding on it. So it kind of looks like an MSNBC kind of look and feel, like with the talking heads.
So you're doing video as well?
Yes. Okay. Yes. That's video is probably our most crucial part of this, honestly, because we can make reels. We can make stuff out of it and repurpose it. And, you know, I gave this illustration on a presentation the other day, because a guy tried to tell me that, oh, we'd probably only need to market the first five episodes. Then after that, he wouldn't want any marketing. And I was like, every existing business in the world markets. And then I gave the illustration, and I didn't know this. I thought everybody had Chick-fil-A in their mall, but apparently not everybody has Chick-fil-A in their mall. So if you don't have Chick-fil-A in your mall, or if you especially don't know what Chick-fil-A is, first of all, Google it. It's just the best chicken sandwich in the world, regardless of your politics. So that being said, Chick-fil-A traditionally has been set up in the mall where I'm from in the Midwest. And when you walk through that food court, there's usually that like person that's standing there with a tray of chicken nuggets with a toothpick in them, and they're handing that chicken nugget out to you, right? And so marketing is like that chicken nugget. It's not the whole thing, but they taste it and it makes them want to go, oh, let's have that. That, oh man, that was good. Yeah, I just remembered how awesome Chick-fil-A sandwiches are, even though I've had them, you know, three times a week for the past 2 years. I need a fourth time this week. So yeah, I mean, we use the marketing to be able to, from the video. And so that just creates a lot of opportunities for us to market our clients into their database of people and into our ever-expanding database of people that are following us.
Mm-hmm. So you're giving them little taste tests, basically.
Exactly. Exactly.
This has been part one of our interview. I hope you'll tune in next week for part two. Well, that's the end of this episode. Thanks for listening. And if you like what you heard, why not tell a friend about this podcast? It's available in all the usual locations. Until next time.